Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to MRSN, the Michigan Regional Sports Network.
It's time to enter the locker room. The Coach's Show of Michigan Admirals Minor League Football.
Funky.
Get him going and see what we get. They set Jesse up.
But you got to know if you're in office, though, that you can't talk or whatever. He should be around the game long enough to know. That man was crying last night because he knew after what he said that people wanted to cut his balls off. That's what he was crying for.
He was in fear for his own testimony.
He was in fear for his balls. Now I'm going to tell you this. I think him and Oprah Winfrey are the two most fakest people. I think Oprah's fake.
You will smoke a turd in hell for that.
I'm sorry.
How dare you say something bad about Oprah Winfrey?
I know. I'm going to hell. And for Jesse Jackson.
You're going to Oprah hell. That's even worse.
I know. I would have a book to read a month going to her hell. But
yeah, that's true.
But he was also crying because he knows, he's thinking to himself, if I would have kept his mouth shut about those chocolate salty balls, I probably would have a job in the cabinet. Now I screwed that up, and I got to sit here in freaking Chicago and watch a crappy basketball team all year, no good football team, and not do anything except look for young women to try to impregnate.
Tell us what you really think, William. Yeah,
Jesse,
what you're saying is you're not inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I am inclined at this point, and I met the man. He came to our high school and talked, and he looked at me and was like, what is this little white kid doing here with the flat top?
Okay.
But
I'm not going to even touch that. what's your take on that?
I mean, honestly, I really, because I kind of forgotten about the whole, you know, cutting the balls off thing until you guys just, you know, mentioned it. But it's hard to read people because it seems like everybody, especially in politics, has some sort of ulterior motive. So Jesse may have been genuine. Jesse may have been crying because, like Bill said, he messed up and he was probably trying to figure out how he was going to get a ride home last night. So I don't know how to read it. You know, I saw them both crying and it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Well
Oprah wasn't crying. She was using her acting skills to try to swell up some tears and just couldn't do it because she sucks as an actor. And the only way she can get emotional is dressed like she's in the 1830s in some farm somewhere. That's the only way she can crack up some tears when she don't have no makeup on. She can't cry when she got makeup on.
Well, you're going to have
people go see what she really looks like.
You have every black woman in America hunting you down. You can't talk about Oprah.
No, I'm not, because no black women in America go to Oprah Winfrey's show, watch her show. It's all white people.
That is true.
That's how Barack got the white vote. All the white people watch Oprah.
If Oprah said it, it's okay. Yeah.
Let me tell you my take on this, okay? I'm not, I am not a great Jesse Jackson fan, and you've heard me say more than once on this show that Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton do not speak for me and do not speak for every African-American person in this country, as some people, especially in the media, would like you to believe. But, and speaking as a person who is not originally a Barack Obama supporter, what he said went over the line. And, you know, and I don't think it was so much that I think, let me say that I'm inclined to give Jesse Jackson the benefit of the doubt because of what he has went through, you know, what he went through with Martin Luther King and just what he's seen in the past upteen years to get to this point. And, you know, when you're intimately involved in the struggle, in the civil rights struggle, as Jesse Jackson was, it can be, and I would imagine it would be, a very overwhelming experience, even if you don't really like the guy that achieved this. It still, I think, would be an overwhelming experience. I have seen more people that I never would have thought would get emotional over this, I saw Colin Powell on TV this morning cry over it. I've seen Cunnilingus Rice well up too.
Oh,
and Lord, and Lord have mercy, I don't like that woman.
She's kind of scary.
She is kind of scary, and plus she's George W. Bush's lapdog, but you know that's for another time. But you know, before I play this clip here, what really struck me about last night was watching the jubilation. I have never seen this in a presidential election. I do you know when Clinton got elected, I didn't see this kind of jubilation from people of all walks of life. All the people that was in Grant Park last night, thousands upon thousands in Grant Park last night, people celebrating all around the country, people spontaneously going in front of the White House and celebrating. You know, I really think if some of them had the means to and weren't scared that they were going to get shot in the back by a Secret Service agent, they probably would have had a couple of Mayflowers up in the parking lot of the White House.
Well, there's two things I want to say real quick.
Okay.
Two. The Secret Service were out there taking pictures of the people going nuts with them. That's what they said on TV.
Yeah.
And the other thing that struck me last night, and I don't know how much you guys watch, was when they showed McCain. One, the people there was a quarter the size of Obama. And two, they were all white people who were pissed off, and every time they said Obama's name, they booed. That's all you need to know about McCain's people, that when McCain said his name, they booed. And they were all white. There was no diversity with McCain's people. But yet when they showed Obama, there was black, white, Arabic, Mexican, mixed people, all of them going nuts, and all of them emotional about it. You didn't see that with McCain. And right there, if you just took a snapshot of just people, of supporters, you could see why he blew them out like he did.
Yeah,
to compare it to a football game, it's like being up 49-0 at halftime and going, you know what, play freaking Rudy at quarterback, because this team is not going to win.
It was, you know what? I got once to say one thing, and this is something that I did last night, really on a whim. You know, when it started getting close to him getting 270, I actually turned on the Fox News channel. All right,
I did also,
and you know, for the main reason, you know, I have always hated the Fox News channel. They always tout themselves as being fair and balanced. And they are the furthest thing from being fair and balanced. They're so right-wing, it isn't funny. To see their faces, or people that are supposed to be impartially reporting the news, and to see how either upset or crushed they were, was the funniest crap in the world to me.
Just sitting around depressed.
It was terrible. I mean, you know, it's all over and everything, you know, and they do these little half-assed congratulations, and then they still want to try to stick a knife in and twist it, you know. It's over, man. Your man lost. You don't live with it. We lived with George W. Bush for 8 years.
One of the funniest things was when Karl Rove was talking about, well, Ohio's huge and whatever. Once McCain gets Ohio and that, right, and then the guy has to cut him off and go, well, we just project Barack Obama the winner in Ohio. And he just had this stunned look on his face like, oh. You knew it was over by 9:30, because if you did the projections of all the places he was going to win, it was over earlier. They just had to wait for the polls to close in California.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
you know,
that's an ass kicking. That's an ass
kicker. Everybody knew that. And we talked at the beginning, Lon brought this up at the beginning of the program tonight about his victory speech last night. And I wanted to play a clip toward the end that was really, really profound to me. And it's sort of, sort of MLK-ish, sort of JFK-ish, But I thought this was the best part of the speech.
Stories that will be told for generations, but one that's on my mind tonight is about a woman who cast her ballot in Atlanta. She is a lot like the millions of others who stood in line to make their voice heard in this election, except for one thing. Ann Nixon Cooper is 106 years old. She was born just a generation past slavery, a time when there were no cars on the road or planes in the sky, when someone like her couldn't vote for two reasons, because she was a woman and because of the color of her skin. And tonight, I think about all that she's seen throughout her century in America, the heartache and the hope, the struggle and the progress, the times we were told that we can't, and the people who pressed on with that American creed, yes, we can. At a time when women's voices were silenced and their hopes dismissed, she lived to see them stand up and speak out and reach for the ballot. Yes, we can. When there was despair in the Dust Bowl and depression across the land, she saw a nation conquer fear itself with a new deal, new jobs, a new sense of common purpose. Yes, we can. When the bombs fell on our harbor and tyranny threatened the world, she was there to witness a generation rise to greatness and a democracy was saved. Yes, we can. She was there for the buses in Montgomery, the hoses in Birmingham, a bridge in Selma, and a preacher from Atlanta who told the people that we shall overcome. Yes, we can. A man touched down on the moon. A wall came down in Berlin. A world was connected by our own science and imagination. And this year, in this election, she touched her finger to a screen and cast her vote. Because after 106 years in America, through the best of times and the darkest of hours, she knows how America can change. Yes, we can. America, we have come so far. We have seen so much. But there's so much more to do. So tonight, let us ask ourselves, if our children should live to see the next century, if my daughters should be so lucky to live as long as Ann Nixon Cooper, what change will they see? What progress will we have made? This is our chance to answer that call. This is our moment. This is our time.
That ending was one of the best speeches I have ever heard in my entire life. And, before we move on to what we usually talk about, which is sports, I want to put this all into perspective and just go through a timeline real quick, if I may, guys.
Yeah.
Brown versus the Board of Education was 54 years ago. The Montgomery bus boycott was 53 years ago. The March on Washington and the Birmingham church bombing, 45 years ago. The Selma March, the Watts riots, 43 years ago. The Detroit riots, 41 years ago. Martin Luther King was murdered 40 years ago. Shirley Chisholm, the first African-American woman to run for president, 36 years ago. Myself becoming the first African-American coach in the Flint-Carmen-Ainsworth School District 20 years ago. We've as a country, we've come a long way in just a couple of generations. And for all those millions of people to see a man, as Martin Luther King says, judging him by the content of his character and not the color of his skin, and to make him, in January, the most powerful person in the world, says a lot about this country and how far we've come in just a couple of generations. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I was thinking about just, you know, that earlier, about just all the history that's happened in, you know, my lifetime that's not even, you know, obviously shorter than yours. Not by a whole lot, though, because you're still a young man. But, you know, just, you know, I was sitting there, I was thinking about, you know, just some of the stuff. I was like, wow, you know, there's just, you know, things just
man, it's
changed.
Just November. You don't have to start sucking up to me until at least minicamp.
I'm just saying, you know.
I'm not necessarily
a spring chicken. You might be like a midsummer chicken at this point. I'm not real sure, but I mean, I don't know exactly what the difference is. But
Bill's still an embryo, right? He's still an egg.
But you know, just I mean, you know, things like, you know, Tony Dungy winning the Super Bowl, you know, Art Shell, you know, put in the sports context, first black coach, you know, just. Things like that, you know, I'm just like, wow, you know, I've actually witnessed, you know, some history in my life, you know.
Yeah, that's, like that's said, very true.
The great
but as a segue out. To that, as a segue yeah. to getting back into sports here,
see,
the more things have changed, and it's, in some respects, the more they stay the same. When, you know, we find out today that Ron Prince is being forced out of Kansas State. Bill's great friend Tyrone Willingham was forced out of Washington a couple of weeks ago. And correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, but that leaves three African-American coaches in Division I football. And in Division I is about, what, 103, 104 teams, right?
119.
And there's only three left. Sylvester Croom for Mississippi State, Turner Gill for Buffalo, and Randy Shannon at Miami. Did I miss anybody?
No, I think that's it.
Out of 119 major colleges in the United States, there are only three, after this season is over, there will be only three African-American coaches.
I mean, five out of 119 ain't all that great of a ratio.
No, it isn't. And, you know,
where's the outrage for Prince not getting 5 years? Because everybody wanted to lambaste Notre Dame is racist for getting rid of Willingham, but Prince has had now, he had an okay recruiting class. He had good players. Where's all the outrage at that he's being forced out?
And what is just as, you know, his record is not the best in the world. You know, everybody's not going to be, but his guys graduated.
Yeah, but see, that's not what college football is all about.
But very true. But by the same token, though, the abysmal record of the NCAA in terms of hiring African American coaches. Nobody calls them out on this. Why isn't there, you know, you can call the Roselle Rule affirmative action or whatever you want to call it. I really don't give a crap. But it has been proven in this country that change is not something that people do for the most part willingly. What happened last night did not miraculously come about over this last year or two of this election cycle. It started in 1954, Brown versus Board of Education and the Little Rock Nine and people like that, where people were forced into this new kind of thing called integration. If it wasn't for that, there would be no African-American coaches in the National Football League. There would be less than three, there'd be no African-American coaches in the NCAA. There would be no black quarterbacks. There would be no black president.
And I think it makes me wonder if, as far as African-American coaches, if these administrators or the NCAA heads don't think that only African-Americans only make good players and don't have good football minds. Oh, yeah, you can play quarterback, you can play running back, receiver, whatever, but you don't have the mind to run a team. It makes me wonder if that's the thought process or the mentality of the NCAA heads and some of these athletic directors at the D1 schools.
Well, yeah, and you bring up an excellent point there, Lud. Bill, how many African-American GMs are there in the NFL? How many are there in Major League Baseball? Only one in baseball that comes right off the top of my head is the guy for the White Sox.
It's Kenny Williams is only
right.
One that I know of.
Football, I don't know. You know, Ozzie Newsome used to be, I'm not sure whether he still is. He doesn't have the title of general manager, but he basically does the general manager stuff for the Cleveland Browns. I don't know whether he still does that, but I can't think about anybody else off the top of my head doing that, you know. Once again, it's a gradual thing. You know, there's glass ceilings that you have to break as a minority, whether you're African American or any other minority. For all that Norm Chow has done in college and in professional football, why isn't he a head coach somewhere? Why hasn't he at least been given the chance?
I mean,
Norm Chow and any number of African American coaches in the NCAA right now deserve just as much chance to fail as everybody else does. They deserve just as much chance to fall on their ass as Rick Neuheisel does. After all these years getting back into college football at UCLA and looking like a chump, we in the NCAA, we deserve at least that right, you know?
Okay, I'm going to say something, and I may get killed. I mean, you guys may kill me for saying this. I think that, one, they go after the big, huge schools, which, one, the time span for people with patience there is small. Now, I don't know why Ron Prince decided if they're forced him out, or maybe he just thinks, you know what, I'm not getting it here, job done here. That wasn't a major school, but you're going for all these top dog schools where maybe you got to be like a Sylvester Croom, who did the smart thing. He went back, his alma mater was Mississippi State, and they knew when he got there, you know what, our school and our football program is in total shambles. You do what you do, and we are going to leave you alone. And now look at him. He's starting to get some success. He's getting people to play there. If you go and want to take one of the top five jobs and you're an African-American, one, you already got a strike against you because you're African-American, like it or not, with these athletic directors. And two, their patience is going to be really short, which if you get fired, that hurts you down the road. You maybe got to go to a second-tier school, prove yourself, and then move your way up and learn how the game works. That's what
I agree with that to a degree, Bill. But most of these guys, for one thing, they don't get those chances. Turner Gill is a good coach, but he's been up for Nebraska and other jobs. But here he is at the University of Buffalo, all right? The big schools are not going to hire these guys unless there's somebody like Kansas State that's falling on hard times. You're not going to get an African-American coach that's going to come in to a good situation. And when that happens, and if they can't rise them up to the point where they're a good team, they end up getting fired, they seldom – get that second chance, like Rick Neuheisel, like Dennis Frangione, you know, like O'Leary in South Florida, who lied on his resume.
I mean, I'll put it to you this. Mike Haywood at Notre Dame was in line to get the Northern Illinois job and didn't get it. He didn't get it. And the guy's coach that coaches him now is not doing a very good job. It just means, well, how come he didn't get it? Mike Haywood was at the University of Texas when Vince Young was there and was the offensive coordinator and was the number one recruiter. Got Vince Young. Was at Notre Dame and got a lot of the players they have now. He recruited them. But yet he can't get a head coaching job. And he's at Notre Dame.
You know what I also wonder, though? I wonder if these, you know, these few African-Americans that do get these chances at the Division I schools, if the athletic directors, the boosters or whatever, are looking at them thinking, okay, you know what? This is Kansas. You know, we don't have a lot of African-Americans that are, you know, these super studs that are coming out of these little, you know, these small towns, these little bad situation ghetto schools, but are just incredible athletes. They're not looking at us. So if we get a black coach in here, then that may boost our recruiting, and we may be able to get, you know, some of these blue chip kids that would normally go to, say, Jackson State or Mississippi Valley State or something like that. And then when that doesn't happen, it's like, okay, you know what? You didn't get no colored boys in here to run the football for me. You got to go.
Well,
I mean, I'll give you a perfect example, but it's not really the same, and it ties into what we started the show with. Barack Obama's brother-in-law coaches at Oregon State. When they were interviewing him, the athletic director walked up to the president and said, "You're not going to believe this, but I think I'm going to hire this guy, Coach Robinson. He's a good coach. You know who his brother-in-law is?" The guy goes, "No, I have no idea." He goes, "His brother-in-law is Barack Obama." And the president of the university goes, "I don't give a damn who his brother-in-law is. If he doesn't win any basketball games, he's out of here."
Well, you know, but they gave him the chance. I mean, and
that's the difference between basketball and football.
You know, that's apples and oranges with basketball and football. Basketball has always done a much better job of minority coaching hires than football has. You know, NCAA football, like I said, I'll say it again, they have a terrible record of hiring African-American coaches. And once again, you know, we should all be proud that we have progressed as a country and as a society to the point where an African-American man can become the leader of the free world. But don't get carried away. Because this happened does not mean all the ills of the world and all the discrimination in the world and all the things along that vein have just disappeared because Barack Obama is the next president of the United States. And you look at the NCAA football, and that stares you right in the face. And it kicks you in the teeth. And the same thing, I'm going to tell you, and this is a controversial thing around here anyway, and it's an unspoken thing, but I'm going to speak it. You know, as far as coach hires go, even in the year 2008. As an African-American coach, there are certain schools that you just don't apply to for coaching positions because there's no way in hell you're going to be considered. And people will listen to this program and say, well, you know, it is 2008. How can that be? You know, you apply for the job and may the best man win. No. In a perfect world, it's that way, but this world is still not perfect yet. Do you honestly think, once you sit down and close your eyes and think about it, Lon, that I could go to, let's say, Goodrich and say, I want a coach?
You know, honestly, I think you could have a completely just, you could have won every game on every level, completely undefeated as a coach. And if you went out to Goodrich, they go, okay, well, your resume is impressive. We'll call you. In a perfect world, they say, wow, you know, it's an honor to have you here. You know, come on in. We think you can do wonders. But reality, no. They're going to look at you and say, okay, yeah, we'll take you into consideration. And probably, more than likely, hire somebody else.
Well, that's something diplomatic.
I mean, you know, it is somewhat still a family show, so I can't say what I want to say.
I understand. You're in a roundabout way agreeing with me.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I think if you went to Goodrich, Lake Fenton, you know.
We're not allowed to mention that title of the show, by the way.
I'm mentioning.
That's why I'm going to tell you. Lon, that is why it took, you know, and when I announced that I was coming back for one last year with the Admirals, that's why I mentioned people like Pat Fields, who hired me at Carmen Ainsworth. That took a lot of guts, and you know, and I have to give my hat, you know, take my hat off to him. You know, if I ever at some point, you know, I don't even know whether Pat Fields is even still alive, but, you know, if I ever at some point got into the Minor League Football Hall of Fame or some kind of thing like that, you know, other than, you know, my wife and my children who, you know, who've been the best during my coaching career, you know, really right after that is Batman, because he took a chance on an unknown person, first of all. But he took a chance when Carmen Ainsworth was first started and was a school district that was 95-98% white. To take a chance on a black man, that took guts, even though it was only 20 years ago.
And I think if you walk into a Goodrich football game just to watch, I think you get looked at funny. Yeah,
well, you know what? I enjoy the looks I get when I go into a hockey game with Bill the broadcaster.
Yeah, but I mean, but if you go to Goodrich, you know, it's gonna be like, honey, hide your purse. Just swallow the
Well, I don't get those. I gotta be honest. I'm not gonna say I get those kind of looks, but I do get those looks like you lost.
I can say that I noticed the look at once this year. I'm not gonna say where, but we got the look, and I purposely walked two steps behind him, because if someone looked at him crazy or said something as we were walking by, oh, it was on.
You know,
but I won't say where we were.
And Lon, this is because that he is of the of the Caucasian persuasion. That he's only felt this once.
No, I know. I only noticed that. I thought it was going to be once. I have sensed it at one. Let's see that. Yeah, three other places. We kind of sat there, and there's that look, and we got it from somebody in government. That's the thing that blew me away, the look. You could see the guy's reflection in the mirror. That's what blew me away. We won't mention names, though.
No. We'll let that go.
We'll let that go.
In fact, we'll let this whole conversation go and move on, because we've actually been talking about this 40 minutes, and we could probably talk about this all night, to be honest with you, but we got to get on to some more stuff, you know what I mean? I will say, first of all, I have no butthole of the week this week. You know, I guess everybody's acting good. I'm going to have to change that you know, because I have actually, first of all, two write-ons of the week. I'm going to have a write-on
I have a butthole of the week.
Well, okay. Well, let's change the butthole. We're going to have a write-on of the week and a what the hell of the week.
Okay.
So first, Bill, who's your what the hell of the week?
My what the hell of the week is Ralph Nader. I cannot believe this fool actually said what he said. He said that, well, Barack Obama may be Uncle Sam now, but in a couple months, he's probably going to be an Uncle Tom. What the hell are you doing, dog? And he said it on Fox, and the guy on Fox was like, are you serious? Did you just say that stupid crap? And he just looked into the camera and was like, oh, well, you know. You are misquoted, you moron. How could you say that? How is there 1% of the population that voted for this guy? That proved right there that we still have a long way to go.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, Ralph Nader reminds me. Do you remember? I know you've seen this commercial. They're talking about Alzheimer's disease. And the elderly couple comes through the airport, and the grandpa comes up. Susie, I'm not Susie, I'm Betty. You know, and then they go on from there. And how confused he is. That's Ralph Nader. He's like somebody's confused old grandpa. And you really shouldn't pay any freaking attention to him. You know that you have said something incredibly ignorant when a commentator on Fox News Network goes, dude! But, hey, that's a good one. You know, even though it wasn't sports, but, you know, we most of our show tonight hasn't been about sports. But my two write-ons of the week, both of them have to do with sports. First of all, my first write-on of the week is to Kevin Johnson. Right on, buddy. He's been elected mayor of Sacramento, California.
Oh, he did win? Okay, cool.
Yes, he did win. And, you know, the former Phoenix Suns guard and part-time child molester. He didn't get convicted of that. I just had to say that because you should have seen the commercials. I saw one on YouTube where they were bringing that stuff up. You know, you think that John McCain and Sarah Palin got nasty? Oh, no. Much worse. But anyway, you know, congratulations to KJ. You know, hope he does well as mayor of Sacramento. The next guy, and I really found this, pretty nice here. Ken Mink, he's a 73-year-old full-time student down in Tennessee. The school he goes to is Rome State Community College. He played in a basketball game, scored 2 points Monday night, in a 93-42 victory over King's College's junior varsity team. He entered the game with about 16 minutes left in the second half and attempted one shot in about 3 minutes. 7 minutes later, he went back into the game, was fouled, and he made two free throws. 52 years ago, this guy was playing college. He's originally from Knoxville, Tennessee. He played at Lee's College in Jackson, Kentucky. After someone soaked the basketball coach's office, he lost his spot on the team and was expelled from school. He says to this day he didn't do it. But last year, after shooting baskets at a neighbor's house, he wrote to several area colleges. And Rome State coach Randy Nesbitt agreed to give him a shot. For practicing regularly with the team since school began in August, and it all culminated Monday night with his 2 points in the game against King's College. 73 years old. You are as young as you feel. What do you think about that, guys?
He's just got to be in some just the most incredible shape ever. To go into a game, but to practice with them on a regular, you know, like as part of the team, he's got to be in incredible shape. Hats off.
Probably better shape than I am. I know better shape than Bill.
He is good.
But, you know, right on to the both of them. And, you know, they're doing something. Number one, I couldn't be 73 years old and trying to run up and down a basketball court. Much props to him. And I definitely couldn't be a politician. And, you know, because the first time, I just don't have the temperament for it. The first time somebody says something about my wife or my kids, bringing that into the discussion of whether or not I should be in office, I mean, you know, I can see the headlines now. Mayoral candidate strangles opponent. I just couldn't do it. And it really takes a special person, you know, nowadays to even do that sort of thing. But I'm gonna take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're gonna really get into some other stuff here. Dante Culpepper, Allen Iverson, there. You know, we want to talk about the big trade there, and talk about the Tennessee Titans, and also talk some college football. So stay with us. You're listening to The Locker Room on Blog Talk Radio and the Admirals Radio Network.
This is Randy Goodnight, President of the United States Football Alliance, and you're listening to The Locker Room on Blog Talk Radio and Admiral Radio Network.
No matter what's happening on the playing surface, no matter what the other team is doing, no matter what you think the officials are doing, sportsmanship matters. Sportsmanship defines us. It's one of those things that reveals our true character. Sportsmanship is what matters in educational athletics. For more information about sportsmanship, go to the web at MHSAA.com. A public service message from the Michigan High School Athletic Association.
We got everything, right? Face paint?
Check.
Jersey?
Got it.
Grill and burgers?
Yep.
Cooler?
Come on.
Please. Designated driver?
Whoops.
Before you head out to watch your favorite NFL team, make sure you pass your car keys to the designated driver. Make the right call when it comes to getting home safely. Sign up at the designated driver booth at the stadium and remember, always buckle up. You could be following your team to the Super Bowl. This message is provided as a public service by this station and Team Coalition.
This is Walter Jackson, outside linebacker of the Michigan Admirals, and you're listening to The Locker Room on Blog Talk Radio and the Admirals Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Locker Room on Blog Talk Radio. Donald Matthews, Bill Schnornberg, and Lon Turner with you as always. The answer is in the D.
Possibly. You know, they say he can't play until Chauncey passes that physical tomorrow. So.
Yeah, he'll pass the physical. They just dragging their feet to keep AI from playing. But, you know, let's talk about that for a few minutes. You know, what's the impact on the Detroit Pistons? What's the impact on the Denver Nuggets? You know, there was great fanfare with AI coming over to Denver and talking about him meshing with Carmelo Anthony, which I never thought would happen. I just did not think that they could play together. What's the impact?
I looked at when he went to Denver initially, I remember the whole issue he had with Jerry Stackhouse in Philly. Like, you know, we can't have two top dogs here. So I don't know if he's grown up and he's matured or and whatever, and he can handle sharing the spotlight, sharing the team or whatever. Being here and I was kind of confused by that trade. You know, I'm like, okay, McDice, you know, goes out. He's good off the bench. Chauncey Billups is, you know, Mr. Piston. I'm like, you know, they're trading for Iverson? I'm like, And then once it came out that it's, you know, possibly to make a play for LeBron next year to sweeten the pot for him to come to Detroit, okay, now that makes sense. So this year, I think he'll come in, you know, you get more points per game, get more assists per game. But I look at Iverson as more of a shooting guard, which is what as far as I know, he always was until he went to Denver. So I think the Pistons are going to keep rolling. You know, Pistons fans, everybody's up, oh, they traded Chauncey. But like Rasheed Wallace said, it's a business. Joe Dumars is going to is making a play to get LeBron here next year, and that could be the missing piece. And if getting Iverson helps get that missing piece to get them back into the finals, to get them another championship trophy, yeah, it is what it is, I guess. I think it'll be okay.
Well, I think the key is that everyone's missing is $40 million. That's what the Pistons are going to have to use next year for the salary cap, which means they could go out and sign LeBron, Chris Bosh, and somebody else to add on to the roster that you already have. They could wait 2 years and go after a Marty Stoudemire, who's going to be a free agent in 2010, and have enough money in the salary cap to sign him, too. I mean, that's sick. If you couldn't get Chris Paul, which New Orleans wouldn't give up a night with Michelle Obama in the Lincoln bedroom to trade Chris Bosh, you're not going to get him. So you might as well go get Iverson and score. And get a score, be able to run up and down the court and score points. That's what you're going to need to win the title. You're going to have to score points. And
that,
like it or not.
You bring up a very good point, Bill. That makes the Pistons, for one thing, it makes them more flexible. You know, Lon brings up that he's more of a two-guard, you know, and maybe so, but it gives you that flexibility at that 1, 2, and 3 spot. You could have Stuckey at 1 and Iverson at 2. You could slide Rip to 3. You know, and alternate him with Tayshaun Prince, or you could put Iverson at the point and have Rip at 2 and Tayshaun at 3. I mean, there's so many different combinations.
Look at this lineup. I put this lineup on the floor. How would you like this lineup on the floor? Who do you guard? Stuckey, Iverson, Rip, Tayshaun, and Rasheed. You throw those 5 out there.
Right.
Who do you can't double team anybody, and you can run. And the good thing is, your big man who trails the play can spot up at the 3-point line and shoot a 3 if he wants to.
Right. You know, and Iverson brought that up in the press conference yesterday. How it's going to be hard for teams to double team him now. I mean, he sees double teams all the time to take the ball out of his hands between the rings, but. You know, it's going to be harder to do that now because there's so many options on the Pistons. I have never been a great Allen Iverson fan, you know, particularly, you know, some of the stuff that he's done in the past. But hopefully he's matured. And, you know, as much as I love Chauncey Billups, and my wife was a great Chauncey Billups fan, Billups has declined the last couple of years greatly. You know, part of it's injuries and part of it's just the natural process, I guess. I don't know. But his play has declined measurably the last couple of years. And to be able to basically this is going to be a one-on-one trade, Iverson for Billups, because they're going to buy out McDice, and they're going to probably release Sam. You know, neither one of those two were even requested to come to Denver.
Now, see, I've been seeing reports that Rex Chapman says that McDice is staying in Denver. I've been seeing
well,
that, so I don't know.
The last I heard, they were negotiating a buyout.
Right. I had heard that too, and then I see right after that, Rex Chapman says, McDice will remain with the team. And I'm thinking, okay, if McDice comes back and Pistons re-sign him, McDice has his nights where he can go out and drop 20-25.
Yeah, absolutely. McDice has said several times that he does not want to play for any other team but the Pistons. If he went to another team, he would retire first.
But you know what this all shows, what this all boils down to? It's Joe Dumars is a freaking genius. He is a mad scientist.
Well, let's not go that far just because he may be a genius when it comes to trades. Drafting, he maybe had three players he drafted that you've gone, oh, okay, those were great picks. But when it comes to trades.
But Bill, I've heard this several times over the last couple of days on Sports Talk Radio, people saying the exact same thing that you're saying. But let's face it, drafting players in any sport is a crapshoot.
I agree with that, but I'm just saying, and that's why I think the draft, when it comes to basketball, is overrated. Because where you never see any teams in the NBA who work their magic and get to the championship through the draft. You may see one player, but then it's a bunch of free agents who end up coming with the player, and you mess the free agents with that player you drafted a couple years before. You look at Cleveland. Cleveland drafted LeBron. They got a bunch of chumps who are free agent journeymen around him. They don't have a bunch of draft picks around them. You just don't. Going back to AI for a second, we're wondering about how he's going to match. I think the glare of that championship raid is going to trump a lot of AI selfishness that he really doesn't have a lot of, because he will bust his ass when he plays. But I think the glare of that raid and knowing that right now it's the Pistons and the Celtics like it used to be. It's those two teams. And the Pistons should have beat the Celtics last year. Chauncey was hurt and played terrible, and Stuckey had a bad 3 minutes against the Celtics. Or the Pistons would have had that series come back to Detroit for game seven.
And this trade is purely, part of it, a great part of it, salary cap and everything. But this is not a trade to say, I've given up on this year. Far from it. This puts, I think, the Pistons in position to get to the championship. I mean, you were getting to the Eastern Conference Finals with the team you had. If you were satisfied with just doing that, you would have stayed pat. And you probably would have made the Eastern Conference Finals again. Whether you would have beat Boston, I don't know. And let's face it, Boston is the cream of the crop in the Eastern Conference right now. Probably, I ain't going to say head and shoulders, but they're the cream of the crop right now. And Iverson, I think, is going to give that added flexibility and make the Pistons more of an up-tempo team, and finally give Detroit that player that can create off the dribble.
And I think Iverson, honestly, you brought up the glare of that ring and just the supporting, because he has a supporting cast around him that he's never had before. I think he's going to be re-energized. I think he's going to go out and he's going to kill him this year. Just that, like you said, the glare of that ring, something that he has been chasing since he came into the league, made the finals one time, and then that was it. So I think it's going to make a big difference in just him.
We talked a little earlier about the old AI and whether or not he can change and conform to the Pistons' way of doing things. We'll get it from the horse's mouth from the press conference yesterday. Here's Allen Iverson.
I have my own basketball team now. and I think my wife has helped me get better, as a person. And my surroundings, just having good people surrounding me and just trying to, you know, not to make the same mistake twice. So I think I'm a lot better as a person and player. You know, as far as the basketball side of it, I think I'm better because I know the game a lot more than I did before. You know, early in my career, I just played with my athletic ability, and I didn't really think the game through. Now, you know, I use my athletic ability still, but I try to think the game a lot more, you know, sort of like a John Stockton or Karl Malone, just, you know, trying to be witty about everything I do on the basketball court and not trying to use my athletic ability and my speed all the time.
I have to give AI's wife, I don't know whether she's, I mean, you know, I guess I have to give her props. Well, you remember what happened to her a few years ago, right? When AI was first in the league, how Iverson kicked her ass, threw her out the house butt naked.
Yeah.
And she's still there. But he's got all them kids now, like you just said. He's got five kids now. You know, like Johnny Taylor says, cheaper to keep her.
Yeah, I think once he realized that, okay, if I split up with her, she gonna get half of everything. Baby, I'm sorry. Baby, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. You know, I was, you know, I had a bad practice, and you know,
practice.
Exactly. Practice. Went to practice and then
practice.
Speaking of that, and you know, that's another thing that AI, of course, is famous for. A very funny ending to the press conference yesterday. I'll let you take a listen to it.
I got to look in the mirror at myself and think of, you know, things that I can do to help us win a championship. Maybe it's some things that I'll have to change, you know, but one thing's for sure, two things for certain. I'm going to do whatever the coach wants me to do out there on the basketball court. He give me an assignment, I'll just try to carry it out to the fullest.
Even practice?
Practice. We talking about practice?
Okay. You heard it.
I set myself up for that one.
Walk right into that.
At least he's got a sense of humor about that, you know.
Yeah, I think the old cocky AI is gone. I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, we'll see what happens. I might be wrong, but I think just that old, you know, immature, like I said, arrogant, cocky Allen Iverson is gone. I think he's grown up a lot.
We'll see. It's going to be an exciting winter at the Palace for sure as the Pistons once again make the run, try to get them another ring there. And as a longtime Piston fan, you know, I was excited about this year anyway. And you know, to think what this year and the next couple of years may bring, you know, with all the money under the salary cap. At the worst scenario is that Iverson cannot mesh here, and with him being in the final year of his contract, you let him go at the end of the year, or you know, or don't try to re-sign him, because he's gonna declare for free agency and see what he can get.
Yeah, but I honestly,
that's
I don't,
the worst case scenario.
I don't see that happening, because I mean, if you look at just the people that have come, you know, through and have been at the end of their contract. A lot of them, they come to Detroit and they want to stay. I mean, Rasheed probably could have gone somewhere else, you know, when his contract was up. Rip Hamilton just signed an extension. It's like they like being in Detroit. Like Iverson said in the interview, I have my own basketball team. I have good people around me now. And I've noticed that over the years, if people come to Detroit and they don't leave, not on their own free will.
You know, it's a good organization, well-run organization. You know, Mr. D, he's a generous guy when, you know, he feels he has to be. And, you know, even though the Palace is one of the oldest arenas in the league, I think the second or third oldest arena in the league now, it is
that's
still, it is a palace.
That's scary, though. That it's considered as one of the oldest arenas in the league. Because I remember when the Palace was built, and it doesn't seem like it was that long ago. That's frightening to me.
Yeah, I can imagine. Makes you feel old. Huh?
I remember watching them going to see the Pistons play at the Silverdome. You know, so it's just like the Palace. Oh, okay, and you would go by it still. It looks new. You know, you go in there, it doesn't look to be one of the oldest.
Well, you know, Lon and Bill, I'm going to show my age, okay? I can remember going to watch the Pistons playing Kobo.
I was there once.
I heard rumors of that. I think I saw it like on a cave writing or something.
And you know, and when I was a kid, they would come to the IMA Auditorium every year for a preseason game. And you know, they put the basketball court down in the auditorium, and back then the 24-second clocks were on the floor and not on the basket. And they would put it on the floor on one end, and on the other end they put it up on the stage. And the scoreboard on the other side of the stage.
Yeah, it's sad that money has gotten to be such a prolific thing in sports nowadays that teams don't do that anymore. You know, that's sad. You know, the Lions don't go to Saginaw Valley anymore. They go to, you know, it's almost like professional sports, you know, baseball being the exception because they have, you know, they still have a spring training. But it seems like most of them are being pulled farther and farther away from the public. You know, well, if you want to see us, you have to come here and pay all this amount of money, and it's sad to me.
It is, but you know, it's money, definitely a money driven business now for sure. Staying in the Detroit area, the Lions are trying to rise up from the bowels of lethargy. And they figure the best way to do that is to get a fat, broke down, retired quarterback and start him Sunday.
Is the ghost of Matt Millen still hanging around or what?
You got to wonder. You got to wonder. And you got to wonder what Brainiac is figuring. You know, Dante Culpepper hasn't thrown a pass in anger in quite a few months. And I think he's perfect to come in here and he can learn the offense in 3 days and start and we're on our way now.
Well, isn't it sad that's how unimaginative their offense is that somebody off the street could come and learn their playbook in 3 days?
Right. You know, I was thinking the exact same thing today, Bill. How vanilla is their offense when somebody can walk in and have a couple days of practice and nod his head and go, I got it. I'm cool.
And this is a deal I still haven't been able to wrap my head around because normally, and I think it's real funny, something's not right in Detroit with the Lions because, okay, Matt Millen gets fired, suddenly John Kitna is hurt, he's done. They sign Culpepper, now all of a sudden Orlovsky. I didn't see Dan Orlovsky do anything that even looked like he'd gotten hurt Sunday. Other than playing for the Lions, I thought that would have been the most painful thing that happened to him.
Well, he said in the press conference afterwards, Orlovsky said he hurt his thumb on the very first play of the game. So he played the whole game without it. He was in a cast, you know, a removable cast, but he says, you know, that he was set to go for Sunday.
And then
Lions go, you know, well, he's going to be out a month. It's like John Kitna all over again.
And how does this make Drew Stanton feel? You know?
How bad is Drew Stanton when you can't even get a whiff of the field. When the Lions don't think that you're ready to play football, you are a effed up football player.
I couldn't, I would think that in an optimal situation, if you have young quarterbacks, you bring in a veteran that's, you know, doesn't necessarily want to start, you know, for lack of a better example, a Brad Johnson type, you know, that can mentor your, you know, younger quarterbacks. But you go out and start a guy that wants a multi-year deal and wants to start. But you got a young quarterback that's just now starting to kind of get in a little bit of a rhythm. I mean, he went three games without throwing an interception. And then you got a draft pick that, granted, you know, he can't stay healthy to save his life, but it's just sitting there with his thumb up his butt. It's like Andre Ware all over again. I do not understand. I thought it was Matt Millen. I thought Matt Millen was the idiot. I mean, he was an idiot, but apparently it's somebody else dumb in the Lions organization. I just don't understand it.
Well, Bill has dealt with these idiots before, so I know you got something to say.
One, I can't believe we're wasting this much time on the Lions. But two, I think what really the bigger picture here is, the reason why the Pistons traded for Allen Iverson was because Allen Iverson has quarterback experience. So even if he doesn't play a lot of minutes next year, he could, or at some point if the Pistons are not playing, he could go play quarterback for the Lions.
Yeah, it'll only take him a couple days to, you know, to get up on the playbook. Yeah, I mean he played quarterback. He was an all-state quarterback in high school. You know, that wasn't that long ago. You know, he could do it.
Yep. I mean,
especially for Detroit.
It is so bad, and really, I'll look at it this way. I'll play devil's advocate. One, he had that bad knee injury. It takes with an injury like that a year or year and a half to get completely back from it. I don't know what this man was doing. But you have to think to himself, for him to come out of retirement, one, you're going to come out of retirement where you're going to want to go get a ring. Obviously, that's not his plan, because he wants to take his paychecks and make sure he's set for life and get his kids through school so he don't have to work no more. Because he didn't take this going, oh, I know they got a shot to win a Super Bowl in a couple years, so this year I'll play and next year we'll go to the Super Bowl. Because obviously that's not the plan. That's the thing that just – but if it takes him a year to have it, for some way he plays for the rest of the year, at least they have a veteran quarterback next year and you don't have to go out and get it. That's the only thing I could think of them doing this, because after that I have no clue what would make them go out and sign a guy that's been sitting around eating bonbons and probably drinking beer on some porch somewhere, throwing a football to some kids in the neighborhood.
And my question is this. How bad do you have to be to lose your starting job to Jamarcus Russell?
Well, you know what? That's more of that's Al Davis. And Al Davis is an idiot because he goes and trades for somebody and then releases the guy today. But that's a whole other story. But two, they were going to play Russell regardless of how bad Russell was going to be. They were going to play him because they spent all that money. And he was not completely back from that knee injury. It takes a year and a half to come back from an injury that he had with the knee.
Okay, that's enough.
I don't know what they're doing.
It's like it's same city, like completely polar opposites as far as management goes. It's weird.
Yeah, all right, that's enough with the Lions. Forget them. I told you guys that Texas Tech was going to beat Texas. Now, didn't I?
When did we have this conversation? Because the last college game I remember us talking about was
2 weeks ago. We had this conversation.
Oh, I remember saying that that Ohio State would lose to Penn State if Terrell Pryor made a mistake, which happened. But I don't remember the Texas Tech conversation. That was a hell of a game. That was a great game.
It indeed it was, and really, you know, I see a train wreck again coming for the BCS down the road here. You know, Texas has lost. I think Alabama's going to lose before the end of the season, and they really do not want to see Penn State in the BCS championship game. But Penn State's going to win out.
Yeah.
And where does this leave teams like Utah?
The same place that it left Hawaii last year.
I'm telling you, when are they going to wake up? When is the NCAA going to wake up?
I mean, if we can figure it out, it's just them saying we don't want to do this. Because they talk about eight teams. You could do a 16-team playoff. You could start December 8th and say, okay, the teams that don't make the playoffs, you guys go play the bowl games. The final four, the final eight or whatever, can be at the bowl sites. You could still have the four major bowls, and then after that, you go down to the last two, and then you have the and one game wherever you just rotate. It's not that hard.
It really isn't, and you can make money hand over fist. And isn't this what all this is about? I mean, you know, you can say what you want to. People can say what they want to about academics and you know, stuff like that. That's bull crap. You know, Division II and III has playoffs. Is it? You know, and I've said this before. Does that make Division II or III players somehow smarter than Division I players? Because they can do this and keep up with their schoolwork.
Well, I'll give you another reason to look at it. I'll give you a bigger reason. Would the University of Michigan turn down two, maybe three more home games? Would the Ann Arbor Chamber of Commerce be so upset with Michigan having 110,000 for 3 weeks in December in town?
No. I mean, of course not. Of course not. And you said it's such, you know, we've talked about this on shows for years now, talking about this process. And, you know, and let me play you one clip. And, you know, like I said, great minds think alike, all right?
Stories that will be told for generations, but one that's on my mind tonight is about a woman who cast her ballot in Atlanta.
This clip.
I think it is about time that we have playoffs in college football. I'm fed up with these computer rankings and this and that and the other. Get eight teams, top eight teams right at the end. You got a playoff. Decide on a national champion.
He's smart. He should be president.
He already is. Did anybody notice that John McCain echoed that after Barack Obama said that? Because Chris Berman asked, I can't remember what John McCain said. He gave some, I can't remember if he was talking about steroids or whatever he was talking about it. And then then later on in the interview I hear him say, oh, yeah, well, they need a playoff. And I'm like, dude, you seriously, just give it up, please. Go home, go and just, you know, drift off into the sunset and go to sleep. But yeah,
before we get into our NFL picks to end the show tonight, Philip Fulmer, man, I'm old, has been forced out of Tennessee. He's been there for a good 30 some years, hasn't he, Bill?
Playing, coaching, yeah, whatever, yeah, a long time.
Yeah. But, as it is in sports nowadays, is what have you done for me lately? And Tennessee has fallen on some hard times the last couple, 3 years.
But, see, from the way I understood that is that he's going to be forced out of the head coaching job, but he still may be involved with the school. You know, I don't know if it's in what capacity. But that's another difference, like what we were talking about earlier. With the
bus driver.
But still, he's still going to be associated with the school. African American coaches, okay, see you later, darky. Bye. You know, no, just go, please. I'm all riled up.
I'm sorry. I apologize for getting you riled up, but we really touched on some thought provoking. I think. Some thought-provoking subjects today. Some are going to disagree with what one of the three of us said tonight. You know, and hell, I don't care. I speak my mind. I says what I feel. and you know, and the people involved in the NCAA are just, they're idiots. Because you know, really, to go back to the Roselle Rule in the National Football League, and you know, like I said earlier in the show, you know, some may look up on that as affirmative action, blah 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 blah, but you know, if you don't have that rule, you don't have the amount of African American coaches that you would have in the National Football League right now. You just would not have that. You would have, you know, you have your tokens, just like in NCAA football. The three that are going to be left at the end of the year are tokens. It's one thing to be first, but it's another thing to be a token. You know what I'm saying? I got to get away from that because I'll talk for another hour on that. National Football League. We're going to end with the National Football League. Quickly though, the surprise team in the National Football League, of course, is the Tennessee Titans, and they have a very favorable schedule through most of the rest of this season. And my question to you before we get to our picks for the week, can the Titans go undefeated?
No.
No. As much as I hate to say it, no.
I think their big pitfalls are going to be the last two games. I think it's quite possible for them to go 14-0 until the last 2 weeks. And those last 2 weeks, on the 21st of December, they're at home against Pittsburgh. And then on the 28th of December, they're at Indianapolis. And those are far and away their toughest games. They got left, really the toughest games that they've had on the schedule this year. You know, probably those two in last week when they played Green Bay. And, you know, they still got teams. I think up until that point, the teams that they're playing, other than Chicago this week, all of them have losing records.
And you know what? Just in all irony, the Lions will be the ones that beat them. That'll be the only game the Lions win this year. I'm not predicting that, but it wouldn't surprise me just because the Lions are just that dumb.
They tend to play pretty decently on Thanksgiving, so you know anything's possible. But you know, Collins has just done a heck of a job just settling down that offense for the Titans and just being a manager of the game. You know, he's not a great quarterback by any stretch of the imagination, and he doesn't have the pure raw physical talent, not even close to having that Vince Young has. But what he has is that veteran presence. He has that ability. He has leadership ability. Vince Young does not have. He has all the talent in the world, but he has no leadership ability. These guys have zero confidence in him. And I cannot see, you know, whether it's next year or whenever, when Vince Young supposedly reassumes the reins of the Tennessee Titans, I do not see how he's going to be able to get his teammates back in the fold, you know, in terms of him, you know? I mean, you know, I could be wrong, and, you know, if you got an opinion other than that, you know, please sing out.
I think you're right. It's going to take Vince Young coming out and just doing some just completely amazing things for that team and those fans to take him seriously again.
What about you, William?
I think if they can find a deal to get him out of there, I think he's gone. I can't see him being quarterback of that team.
I just, you know, like I said, I just don't see how he can get, you know, with the stuff that he's done this year, I don't see how he can get their confidence to, And I honestly think that if they tried to put him back at quarterback, it would be an open rebellion on any team.
Yeah, I don't look to see Vince Young unless something, you know, Terry Collins gets hurt. I don't see Vince Young playing quarterback. I heard people, you know, talking about him, you know, involving him in the offense and, you know, some other capacity, kind of like they did with Troy Smith in Baltimore here last week. But I don't see him setting foot down again on that field as quarterback again.
Our last thing we have to do tonight is our usual thing that we do here on the locker room. We have our expert analysis from Bill and Lon and myself in picking five selected games for the National Football League this week. Bill continues to lead, but both me and Lon are looking over his shoulder. There ain't no runaway yet. So we're going to start with, and I picked this game specifically because your man crush is starting this week, Bill. I know.
All right, on the NFL Network. You know what I'm wearing tomorrow.
I know that when you saw in the paper that Brady Quinn was starting, it was like, ooh. You had one, didn't you?
You know how it's been a lot more warmer since they announced he's starting.
He's not answering the question. You're doing a John McCain there. You're not answering the question. You had the big O, didn't you?
No, I didn't. Didn't go that far. He throws a couple touchdown passes tomorrow or something. It throws for 350 yards. I'm just saying, the tent will be up.
You know, it's just some things that you just don't say when there's other men, just even on the very high at the top.
I can see
there, Bill.
I can see Bill. You know, Bill. Now he's like, oh yeah, if he throws the 300 yards, the tent will be up. No homo. That's what the kids say nowadays. You know.
What are you talking about? I'm talking about the celebration tent outside. What are you all talking about? The hell are you?
I don't like how this conversation is going. I really don't. But quickly, Denver and Cleveland, what do you guys pick?
Who's home team?
Cleveland.
Cleveland? In honor of Brady Quinn starting, I'll let Bill go first.
Why? We already know who I'm picking.
Still, you got to say it.
I'm going to take the Broncos. No, I'm not.
You're going against your man crush?
I'm taking the Browns.
No, I was going to say. You took that tent down real quick. I'm taking Denver.
I got to go Denver too because I don't think Brady Quinn, I don't think he's going to have the full grasp of that playbook. And, you know, it's all about chemistry, too, at this point.
Well, we know it's not the Lions playbook, or he could have picked it up by now, so.
Next is Green Bay at Minnesota.
I'm going to take Green Bay.
I'll go Green Bay, too.
I'll take the Packers also. Indianapolis at Pittsburgh.
I'm going to take the Steelers.
I'm going to take the Colts.
Indy at Pittsburgh. I got to go with my Steelers. You know, even if Ben can't go, Byron Leftwich did a pretty good job filling in for him.
All righty. Next one is the Giants at Philadelphia.
I'll take the Eagles.
I will take the Eagles also.
You know what? I'm going to go against the trend. I'm going to take New York.
All righty. And finally, the Monday night football game. San Francisco at Arizona. I'm going to take the Cardinals.
Yeah, Kurt Warner's going to have a field day.
I'm just afraid that if they start playing bad, Singletary's going to drop his pants or beat the hell out of somebody at the sideline. So I'm just going to take the Cardinals also. I just don't think that I think Singletary's working for another job because they're going to find a way to get him out of there at the end of the year. He's just going to leave knowing that there's just too many problems there that he cannot deal with or doesn't want to deal with, I should say.
All right. Guys, this was a great show tonight. You know, we got involved with some good topics here, and you know, we look forward to talking to you guys next week. Bill, I think we have a hockey game to do Sunday.
I believe we do.
Yep. All right. You guys check on MRSN.us for the schedule for the next few days, and guys, thanks for calling tonight. Everybody out there, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on The Locker Room on Blog Talk Radio and the Michigan Admirals, the Michigan Regional Sports Network. Good night, everybody.
Funky. Down. Nasty.
Hey, listen to the man.
Godfather.
Payback.
Oh, bless.
People, gotta get over before we go under. People, we gotta get over before we go under. Hey, country, you didn't say what you meant. You just came. Brand new funky president. Stock market going up, jobs going down. It ain't no funky job to be found. Keep going up. Chase from my glass. Now I drink from my pants.